don't get any ideas like I'm talking. I found a speaker before me, so which is gonna be James. But I was celebrating 6 years, and it's been a fun ride. I was out with my wife on Monday. We were celebrating because it was the 23rd, and you know, a lot has changed in the last 6 years, and a lot of those things that I've gotten as a result of being sober, I don't think I would have had I stayed out there. And I've seen some babies in the room, which is kind of unusual for our meeting, but I got a newborn as well, and so it's been a lot of fun, but I'm looking forward to hearing James' talk.
Good. I'm James, alcoholic. And thank you, Robert, for asking me to do this. This is probably what I need in my sobriety. I always find like I always need just when I need it, not on my time, on God's time. A little bit about Robert. Robert took me out sailing, which was pretty awesome. And my mom used to take me sailing when I was younger. And so it was really cool. And I met his family. I met his wife, Mammy. I met his son, James. We had a common bond. You know, I like his son's name. And it was just really cool. You know, I got to see him over Christmas. And, so it's pretty awesome, to meet his family and see that. I think he's probably well more versed than I am. I just got done talking to another friend. I think he's a genius. But that's not for grabs. But thank you for asking me to speak. It's been a little crazy lately in the past, I think just the past year. It's so crazy. Like, I was just talking to someone beforehand. My sobriety date is June 18th, 2008. And I feel like I've been on like an autopilot the first 5 years. And then the past 3 years have just been like work. And I just got a sponsee recently. And it's almost like gut level check. When I tell him to do something, I got to be mindful, am I doing that as well? And a lot of times I'm like, man, I need me to take my own advice. And so, but a little about myself, I'm from the suburbs of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and grew up with a normal relationship and loving parents, loving and beautiful family, and everything I could ever want. And still this day, I think they are my biggest supporters. So I think I'm very blessed to have that. And, from an early age, I have always just had like an addictive personality and whatever it may be. And so then when I discover alcohol, and it just adds to the magnitude of that addictive personality. I really don't want to talk too much about my drinking story, because I left my phone down there and I don't have a watch on, so I have no idea how much time I have. And this room is a little bit awkward. It's really big. And I'm glad that I'm on the floor and not behind that. I've been here before and I thought I was gonna be behind that, and I was really nervous about that. And, because we are not saints. And so, that being said, I took my first drink at 16, and it was like blackout level from the get-go. And first time I drank, 16, blacked out, and I just remember I couldn't wait to do it again. And I don't have this experience of like the first time I took a drink, I drank every single day. You know, I was 16; it was very hard to obtain liquor without getting caught, but. Whenever I got the chance, I just wanted to drink. And, the longer I stay sober, the more that I realize that I have nothing against alcohol. I have everything against what it does to me. You know, I got friends and family that, in the beginning, I would come around and be like, everyone needs to stop drinking, clear out the liquor cabinets, I'm coming around. And it was just like my selfishness imposed on people. Like, my parents, were so supportive and loving. They were like, locking up the liquor cabinet. They're probably out of, like, not trusting me. And, they wouldn't drink wine around Christmas my first year. And now I see it's like, you know, I'm grateful for that, but I realize, you know, we also have to live outside of the rooms, and sometimes alcohol is going to be around. And that being said, I took a drink at 16, and, you know, right away, I mean, I already was, like, a poor student. I'm not going to, like, prop myself up that I was intellectual or any of that stuff. You know, I was, like, probably bottom of my class even when I graduated. And, but, you know, it just already had effects on me. You know, didn't want to do anything, and as soon as I discovered it, it was like, this is awesome. Same thing, you know, with other stuff. As soon as I discovered it, I'm like, this is awesome. I can't wait to do more. And, you know, it's so funny how, like, it just chose my friends. You know, alcohol and drugs chose my friends. It chose, like, my passions, and sports suffered. I played soccer from the age of 5 until I was 18. That suffered. And just so many close calls. You know, I definitely have regrets in my life. I regret not remember graduating. I don't remember. I was under the influence, and so I don't remember graduating. And, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, got arrested by the age of 18. Off to the races there. And Halloween night, got arrested. And I wish I could find that arrest picture, because I looked really good, I think. And, I wish I could have, like, a full image of it. I can still picture it. It was, everything was baby blue Tar Heel, like North Carolina. It was, like, Tar Heel Jordans, light blue shorts, a white shirt, and I think I had a blue hat on. And, you know, I got arrested, and it could have been a lot worse. We were growing marijuana, and the cops came because of a noise complaint, and I probably would have let go, but my big mouth always gets me in trouble, which is constantly my thing. And I kept yelling, stop snitching, and thank you. And so that happened, and that's what led me on to Spiral. I have no idea what I was going to say tonight, which I'm really happy I did that, so that way I couldn't plan anything or any highlights or anything like that. But so I had consequences right away. Fast forward, my aunt lives in San Diego, and we used to visit her every single year. We visited her, and we used to go across the border to Tijuana, and which, I mean, I don't even really consider Mexico, but it is part of Mexico. I just consider it like an extension of like the bad part of California, and so basically, but it is Mexico, and you have to cross the border. And so, anyways, I just did what normal alcoholics do: proceeded to get drunk in Mexico, because 18 is a drinking age. Dollar Dos Equis and dollar quesadillas, whatever you say. And so did that, and got really drunk. Ended up in my first strip club. That was interesting. They kind of like held me hostage in there until I got them to convince me to leave. And then I tried to cross the border, and you know, with paraphernalia and all this other stuff. And thank God I didn't like go overboard, but still I did get detained at the border, so that happened. And which is quite of an interesting experience. They like pull you out of line, they take you to, like, I forget what happened. I was so drunk, I don't remember it, but they're like, do you have anything to declare? And like, it's just always no, like, because my aunt has actually snuck in animals across, which is also a big no-no. She has a thing for like baby chihuahuas that are on the side of the road, and she rescues them. And so she's like stuffed them in their purse before, and she's gotten across. So I just declared nothing, you know, because no is always a better answer than yes. And so they searched my bags, and they found all this stuff. They pulled me out of line. My mom started crying, and it's this whole ordeal. And I'm like, I'm just thinking of, like, if you ever go to Tijuana, I hear it's really bad with gangs now, but when I was going, it was just this unique experience, because there are no rules. Like, you can get dentistry work done, you can just negotiate a price, and you can just keep on going to whatever you want to pay. And the same thing with drugs and paraphernalia and, you know, everything. So anyways, they put me out of line, they questioned me about all this stuff, they take all my stuff, they let me go, but they took all my information down. And the reason why I mentioned that is because 2 years ago, I went on a cruise, and I told my buddies, I was like, dude, they're gonna flag me when I come back into the country. And all my buddies, the whole time, they're like, dude, that's just self-created fear. You know, it's not true. It's not gonna happen. And sure enough, like, get off the cruise ship, they scan your ID or laser or whatever thing. And they pull me out of line, and U.S. Customs comes across, they bring these cops, and there's this whole ordeal, and my buddies are like, dude, what you do, man? Like, because, you know, we're, like, smoking cigars down in the Bahamas, and I'm like, dude, and, like, they're like, they went through everything, like, asking me about if I brought any drugs or any fruit across or anything like that, and I knew it was going to happen, so I'm pretty much convinced that anytime I go back and forth to the country, I'm on, like, some kind of, like, I wouldn't say, like, a watch list, but I'm on some kind of list, and, it's not, I think I'm like, I thought I was just like small fish. Like, I'm bringing drug paraphernalia. Like, I'm not bringing like WMDs or anything like that. And so anyways, that happened, and chain of events, we went to Hawaii right after that, and proceeded to be in a blackout and just caused chaos. You know, I don't want to go too far in the drunk story, but just caused chaos. Ended up getting jumped in Hawaii. Many of you know that story, which sucked, you know, being beat up by Samoans. Most of my stories just end up with me being beat up or drunk and causing damage to the people I love. And so that caused my parents actually to call a treatment center when they were in Hawaii on their wedding anniversary, and they took me and ended up treatment my first time at 19, and ended up coming down to Boca, went to treatment. Like I said, I don't want to talk too much about my drunk law because I want to get sober, and we're on a limited time span tonight. And so yeah, ended up in Boca, and I was just talking to a kid in the halfway house last night about my experiences, and it's just so crazy. I feel like halfway houses are like the frat parties of AA, and it just was like that, you know? You know, dry ice bombs, you know, constant kind of craziness, and so that's just what I did, you know, tons of shoplifting, you know, and of course, you know, I ended up drinking again. And but I had the seed of AA implanted in me because I kind of balked on my four-step, and I ended up going back out. It got much, much worse. I ended up with no place to live, and ended up with all my friends around me basically leaving me, and proceeded to get sober. And age of 20, I got sober at 20 years old, and you know, it's funny, I talk to my sponsor about this all the time, and he's got like 20 plus years, something like that. I don't even know, lots of time, more than I can even imagine. And I just think about, like, you know, where I'm at now, it's like, I feel like I always should be further than where I'm at, you know? And then I talk to other people, and they're like, oh, and they just laugh it off. Like, it's just like part of like the routine of like sobriety. But yeah, got sober at 20, and I always wish I could get that willingness I had back at 20 in my first year. And I don't know if I'll ever get that willingness back, because it was like so crazy. Like, I used to walk an hour every single day. I feel like it's like a back in my day kind of story that our parents would tell us, like, you know, fighting the Cold War and to make it to school and walking 30 miles, and, you know, and this like crazy stuff was like how it was. I would walk an hour each way to meetings. And it was because I didn't have any money, and I always said it was because I was protesting the bus company, but and because they had these things called transfer, and it's just a long story short, I just want to pay the money for the $1.50, and so I would just walk to meetings, and all the bars were on one side of the street. It's a place called Westchester Pike in Upper Darby. And so I'd walk on the other side of the street where there were no bars, and I would go to meetings. And eventually along the way, like I said, man, some of the stuff I did, I don't know. I don't know if I would clean up, throw up, or poop. Like, kind of crazy stuff that, like, my clubhouse that I was part of was crazy. People were, like, you know, drinking and throwing up and causing chaos in the meeting. And my sponsor, it was just, like, the normal. Down here, I don't know how people would react. It was just craziness, you know, like, you know, people showing up drunk, trying to fight people in the meetings, actual fights happening in the meeting, and, you know, I got a sponsor, and people eventually saw me walking back and forth, and I had a curfew, and eventually they started picking me up at the meeting, and then they drive me to the meeting, but then one of the requirements was I had to share if I wanted a ride, And this guy, Jamie, used to come and he used to eat all our food and he used to clip out the coupons in our newspaper. And he had like 30 years. I don't know what he was doing. Sometimes he'd take some of the clothes that was donated for us. But hey, man, everyone's got their own little racket. But anyways, so he would pick us up from meetings. And it was just like, I love this guy. He was like your like mustache old dude with glasses. And he'd fit like 10 of us in this Dodge Cobalt, I think it was, or Dodge Caliber, or whatever that kind of car it was. But it was like this. It clearly, we'd be sitting on top of each other, and we weren't like it was just so crazy. And that was like what he did at 30 years sober, still picking up new guys from the halfway house, which is kind of cool when you think about it. But he made us all share, and so we'd all share, and about how much we hated the halfway house and stuff like that. And we were provided for. Our meals were included. Our clothes were included. Like, it's so funny, like, the little things that piss me off now, that pissed me off then, now I'm like, some guy stole my change, $1.74, I don't forget that amount, and off my desk, and I was, like, ready to go, you know, like, we're both getting kicked out, and, because there was, like, 10 of us in a room, and this is, like, the state facility thing, and so, you know, but the seed of AA was implanted. I think back to a lot of experiences. I want to put a plug in there for Men's Advance coming up March 21st, right? March, sometime in March. See Ryan for details. And but that Men's Advance conference kind of comes into play for my first conference experience. One of my best friends at the time, everyone was talking about this Cape May Roundup, and it was the coolest conference. And I had no money. Mind you, I'm not riding the bus because I'm protesting, so I definitely couldn't afford a conference. And let alone a meal or any of that stuff. And so my buddies, they all chipped together for me to go to a conference. How cool is that? You know, my buddy Bob organized it, and all my friends, they put up like 20, 50 bucks each so I could have a ride there, my registration would be covered, and they paid for me, I guess equivalent to a scholarship. And so I went, and so crazy, man. It was like everyone from every county all together, and there's dances, and there was women, and energy drinks were flowing, and and big coffee pots and all this stuff, and it was crazy, thank you. And you know, my buddy Bob, he said to me, you know, I said, there's no way I could repay the amount, like, 'cause at the time I had nothing. And he was like, dude, just one day either pay me back the money that it cost or do it for someone else. And it's like, you know, sponsor other guys to go to conferences. And it's kind of wild how that works. You know, same thing when people bought me food or gave me rides. I never thought that I'd have a car. And I lived and existed in Philadelphia, kind of worked half a program. I got to talk about some of the crazy experiences that happened. I got involved with a girl that was actively using drugs. That was crazy experience, you know, which proceeded to my last day in Philadelphia. I started to move to Florida because I wanted to be close to my family and I wanted to go to school here. That's the main reason why I'm in Florida, because my family lives down here and I wanted to be closer to them. And I was seeing this girl, and I could not get away from her. It was just, like, so toxic. She used to be in AA, and then she left, and she was doing drugs. And I remember, like, it was one of the craziest moments that I always talk about in my story, just because of how, like, crazy we can get and still be sober. And I still think about that. And, you know, I had to go see her, and I left. And I always tell the story, like, I was sitting in my car, and it was a one-way, and all these cars came on one way and then the other way, opposite way, and all these dudes jumped out with ski masks on, and they came in my car, and I thought I was getting robbed, and instead they're what's considered jump out boys in my city and Philadelphia area, and they had badges and ski masks, and they were trying to bust drug dealers. And you know, here I am in a position that I shouldn't be in, and I'm sober. And you know, mind you, the only way I got out of that situation was by asking them nicely if I could show them something, and I showed them my AA coin, and then they left. And I think, you know, if you ever get in a traffic ticket, just talk about AA, and you might actually get out of it. I don't know. Try it. You know, it could happen. I don't know. I got out of that one, and, you know, proceeded just to, you know, live pretty bad. But you know, it's so crazy. I have no plan on what I'm going to say tonight. You know, I really think it's awesome that Robert celebrated 6 years and that he asked me. you know, because left to my own devices, I probably would be drunk. You know, AA has been an amazing experience. It's weird, you know, this, like I said, this past 2 years has just been a lot of work. And I know what's been suffered in my area has been lack of prayer and meditation. I've been on autopilot, and I had a really good conversation with Ryan before the meeting. And, you know, I've just been thinking about a lot of it. I came to Florida, and, you know, I thought this is what I was going to do, and I was going to work in this field. A lot of people know the field I was in. It was kind of just a crazy environment. And, you know, when I got out of that field, I just felt a world of relief just lifted from me. I worked with corrections, and I was in school for criminal justice. And, you know, so glad to leave that. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I got involved with this group. I think it's important to get involved with a home group. I got to talk about a few things like that. Home group's important. This is my home group. I have a sponsor who I call when I need him the most, probably, you know, not every time when I should. And yeah, so that's what happened. That's what it was like. And what it's like now is just like, you know, just the relationship with my family, I think, is the best thing that's probably happened. You know, I really think that relationship has been mended. I made amends to my dad at 2 years sober, and it wasn't until I was 5 years sober that he actually accepted the amends. You know, my sponsor Todd used to always tell me, you know, do things like, you know, take out the trash, do the dishes, you know, don't be asked to do that. And I did that. And I showed up, and he said, show up for every holiday. And these are the kind of things that, you know, people would tell me to do. And I did that stuff. Before, I was so selfish. I would take their car, I'd go hang out with girls, I'd go to parties sober, and, you know, drop the car off on empty, start off on a full tank. I don't even know how I would do that. Now I'm like watching my gas meter and I can serve gas pretty well. But before, I don't know where I was driving. I was just like going all over the town, you know, young and sober and reckless and hanging out with women. So also another thing I did sobriety was been in therapy for the past year, which for me personally has been the best thing that I've ever done in my life. And it's helped me drastically. You know, outside help has been awesome. You know, that's just been an awesome experience. You know, like doing things that are out of my comfort zone, which has been my whole AA story. You know, I know when I tell a new guy to be like, go ahead and, you know, get a new guy's number, you know, to help them out and start sponsoring or sponsee to start doing that, you know, they're like, I'm so afraid to do that. I know exactly what that's like. I know what that's like to like have to ask for help. And yeah, this is a little bit different. I wasn't prepared for this. So hopefully someone got something out of that, and thanks for letting me speak.
Thanks, James. I'm Stan, an alcoholic. And I have 11 years, which is kind of a weird saying because it's almost like the Matrix or something. This last year was really, really, really rough. And it seems like the longer I stay sober, the harder it is to actually like stay in AA. And I think that's because, you know, with most people, you know, you do this thing, your life gets better. You know, you get jobs, you get a family, wife, kids. You know, there's hundreds of distractions, you know, that you could use as an excuse. And I had moved back here from Fort Lauderdale from a little business venture. And I came back and it was just like completely different, you know, because this is my home group. And it's been my home group for a while. Only the few years that I was down in South Florida was the time that I actually wasn't a member, because I had to get a new home group in South Florida. But, I had every excuse in the book, you know, and I was just very angry, you know, and I had a lot of issues going on in my personal affairs, and I had, you know, two kids, and, you know, a really demanding job and a lot of responsibility, and, you know, and I just really hated going to meetings. Like, hated going to meetings. Like, I'd sit in meetings, and there would just be, like, this grinder, you know? Like, I just couldn't stand the meeting. Like, I couldn't. Sometimes I would even, like just leave right before the meeting ended. And, like, that was, like, forbidden, you know, the way I was sponsored. And the reason why I bring all this up, I'm going to get to the punch here and introduce my speaker, but I think it's very important. You know, because there's this talk about, you know, our primary purpose and, you know, our only requirement is, you know, in order to stay sober, is to carry the message. And I think it's so important. This part is so important because at this time in my life, I started having these weird thoughts about drinking and drugging and everything else. And I immediately just jumped headfirst back in it, tried to start, you know, a men's meeting at my house, you know, and have people over for dinner, and, you know, my wife would cook dinner, and I would grill on the, you know, on the grill, and I was just praying to God. I was like, God, just help me get pumped about AA again, because I'm freaking miserable, you know, I'm just freaking miserable, and sure enough, there's this guy that comes in, you know, to my house, and not me at all. Like, he's very introverted, you know, very intelligent, but just a miserable person, you know. And you could just look at his face, you know what I mean? And I was like, that guy, that's my guy, you know what I mean? He looks way more miserable than I am. And, you know, here I'm trying to host, I'm trying to get back in it, like, get excited about AA again or whatever. And then his buddy, his running buddy, because I guess this wasn't his first merry-go-round, says that you should probably sponsor that guy. He needs you. So I started courting him, and we took a little drive to Men's Advance about a year ago. And of course, you know, I charmed him enough to, you know, ask him, you know, for him to ask me to sponsor him. And very, very good guy, very easy to sponsor. He kind of already knows the difference between, like, right and wrong, and, you know, how honesty is a very important key to this program. And you know, without further ado, I just want to introduce Ryan A. To come up and speak to me.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. It's an honor to be speaking here. Honored to be speaking on behalf of my sponsor, Stan. Stan is, sometimes he's an immature, childish individual whose decisions I don't always agree with. But at the end of the day, he's got a bigger heart than most people I know, and I trust him with my life. And I'm really happy that he's in my life today. So I'm an alcoholic, and I think what's more important to say about that is that I'm always going to be an alcoholic. No matter what state of recovery I achieve, this thing is always going to be of the alcoholic variety. Just today, I was actually at a happy hour after work. I don't normally attend these functions. In fact, I was quite adamantly opposed to it because, in addition to being an alcoholic, I like to be a workaholic. But they said, no, Ryan, we're all going out. You got to come, Ryan. You got to come. And I'm telling them, no, I don't drink. And of course, the reason I don't drink, they think, is that I'm just like this square, miserable individual, you know, dull personality, nothing interesting about me. Of course I wouldn't enjoy drinking. So as much as I want to, like, as much as I have to be humbled and accept that they may have that perception of who I am, you know, I gotta go out, I gotta show up, right? Because this is part of my life, it's my job to show up. And I go out there, and I'll be honest with you guys, I wasn't worried about the drinking. Like, there was definitely a point in my life where going to an event like this would have been extremely nerve-wracking for me, because there was a point where every day of my life, all I thought about was the next drink that I was going to get, and after that, where I was going to get the next drink. That's the kind of person I am. But I'm at this happy hour, right? And, you know, it sucks for me because I'm with the people I work with and they're just talking about their drinking habits while they're drinking. And, like, I'm not part of this thing at all. But, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm showing up, whatever, being a part of the thing. And my boss starts talking about this, like, one of our CEOs of our company talking about this guy, Doug. You know, so I'm like, oh, yeah, you should see Doug drink. Doug will drink anyone here under the table. None of you could hang with Doug. And I'm just sitting there. I'm sitting there like an alcoholic sleeper cell, you know, just like, like I want someone to ask me like what my drinking habits were when I used to drink, you know, because I want them to know, because I have like this ego thing where I just, people need to know what I'm capable of, right? I'm not content just sitting there and like, I have to accept that, I'm not the most important thing in the room. I'm not always the center of attention. Right now is like an amazing opportunity for me because I justifiably can be the center of attention for a moment. But for the most of the time in my life, I'm just not going to be. And that's just the way it is. And I'd like to tell you that, you know, that was just one acute incident today where my alcoholic thinking takes place in my life. But it just keeps rolling. So I go back to my apartment later after work and I'm walking through the hallway, and I see my, so I moved into this apartment about a month ago, and I see my next door neighbor for the first time, right? And so I start talking to him, like, hey, how you doing, man? What do you do for work? You know, immediately comparing myself to this individual. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're really cool, man. Nice to meet you. Yeah, the person who used to live in your place was a complete shitbag, total asshole. You're, like, way cooler. And he's like, yeah, you want to look in my place? Look at my place. And he, like, opens his door, and I look in his apartment, and immediately, I'm like, oh, his place is way nicer than mine. Immediately, he's like this genuinely nice individual, right, trying to get to know this other human being. And all I'm thinking is like, man, how does he have all this stuff? This is nice stuff. I cannot believe it. And I just start comparing myself. And then, so after our interaction, I go back to my place. And in my head, I'm thinking like, I have to like drop a grand at IKEA this weekend. Like, this is unacceptable. Like, I have to be at that level or above immediately. Like, it's just the way I am. And I've always been this way. I'm not from Tampa. I have accepted that I've been here long enough that I'm a Floridian. But I'm from Virginia. I'm from Virginia Beach. That's where I grew up. I didn't grow up with the typical family home. I grew up in an alcoholic household. I had a single mother. In which we lived in a two-bedroom apartment with three cats. And I used to be, like, so insecure about, like, what my living situation looked like. It was like this estrogen bubble, right, that I grew up in, of just, like, my crazy alcoholic mother who, for all frame of reference, was, like, what I considered to be normal, was, like, this person who drank at a bar every day, was extremely obsessive compulsive, you could never meet the expectations of, but amidst all that was like enormously loving and had a huge heart. And so like, I didn't have like really good role models growing up. So I've always experienced a lot of love growing up, but I have also experienced a lot of inability to meet expectations. So I've developed like this very cliche neurotic complex that I'm sure like follows a lot of formulas that therapists hear on a regular basis of like, oh, this guy has mommy issues, he overcompensates, he's hyperproductive, but never good enough for himself, unable to be emotionally vulnerable, so despite being, you know, very successful, never finds himself in a successful relationship. That's been me, right? And I don't know if that's, you know, if that's part of it or if that's not part of it, but as much as that's a perception of myself, what's a grand truth is that I'm an alcoholic. And from the minute I first started drinking when I was 15, I found the solution to all of that shit. I found it immediately, you know, and it didn't just solve one thing. It was like a comprehensive, full package solution. And from the minute I started drinking, I was blacking out, drinking alcoholically. I started saving my lunch money so that I could go buy a Four Loko after school every day. And I was like, that's just the way I drink. I drink every day from the day I started drinking at 15. You know, at first, it was fun. It was a lot of fun at first. Mostly because, you know, left to my own devices, you look at this guy and you're like, that's a miserable individual right there. And I was able to smile for the first time in my life when I started drinking. And The consequences were immediately present. I got arrested with underage possession of alcohol probably 5 times before I was 21. And like, I remember at one point, some guy was like, how do you even do that? Like, you're only underage for so long. Like, you were just so bad at drinking. Like, you should just stop. Like, alcoholic or not, like, logistically, you are bad at this. But immediately I was having consequences. I got expelled from high school despite being at the top of my class. And immediately they started, social services came in. They're like, these numbers don't add up on this sheet, you know. And they looked at my household home. And by the time I was a teenager, my mother had become very ill. She had had this back injury where she had become bedridden, and then she started drinking every day. And you go downhill real quick. It's really sad to watch someone die a slow alcoholic death, but that's what I watched with my mother. But to be honest with you, I didn't really care. It didn't affect me emotionally when I was a teenager. I was so consumed with myself and so blocked off from other people that her condition meant nothing to me. And I leveraged that situation of having social services come look at my home life to use that as a means for me to get the hell out of my home. And I did. And I went and I lived with my surrogate grandmother, and I smoked pot in her house and got drunk every day for the rest of my high school career. And just left my mom to her own devices. And part of me wishes that, you know, I can say I regret that, but I mean, that was the best solution for me at the time. Eventually, I graduated high school, and I went to college, and I thought that by this time, I was still drinking under the pretense that, you know, clearly I drink more than anybody I know. Clearly, it's problematic for me, but it's still a choice I'm making. Like, I still felt that alcoholic, like, I wore the identity of alcoholic proudly. I just thought it was a choice that I made. Like, I chose to be alcoholic. Like, alcoholism seems like a much better gig than just, like, miserable, boring, dull individual, which was what I perceived to be the alternative. So I fundamentally didn't understand that notion about an alcoholic, you know, being powerless over alcohol. But I go to college, and the consequences, they continue to unfold. My mom passed away when I was about 18 years old. And our last conversation, I was actually in a blackout. And the last thing I remember of her is this look of grief on her face when she realized, you know, what I had become in my drinking as a teenager. And that face still haunts me when I think about her. It doesn't really haunt me today. We're actually pretty good. We'll get better in the recovery section of this program. But when I think about that, it's something that I'm never going to forget. And it's definitely something that helps keep me sober today. But I kept drinking in college, and I thought maybe the change of scenery would improve my outlook on life, but it did not. Instead, I just found happier, more well-functioning, passionate people to be resentful toward. I was a very miserable individual in college while I drank. I would quite often, on any given weekend night, while most college students were, studying with their classmates or going out partying with their classmates downtown, you could find me at home alone drinking Orange Jubilee Mad Dog, lying on the floor in the dark listening to Radiohead. That is my natural habitat. Even today, if I get into a particularly bad mood, I'll like lie on the couch in the dark and then like I'll just slip on like that 90s alternative Spotify playlist, and I start slipping into it, and I'm like, no, this is like what we have to, like, this is what we have to change. This is where we came from. That was my life for a while. I hated myself. I had a lot of grief with my mother. My father, who had been estranged from me during my teenage years, had come into my life when I met my older brother for the first time at 17. I had this really strange family structure that I felt like didn't get me because they weren't there in my childhood. And I didn't know how to be honest with them about anything that I was. I didn't know how to face life. I met this girl one day, actually. For the first time, I found something that I thought was worth living for. And I tried to begin courting this woman. Jeez, that was hard to say. And very quickly, I realized that While alcohol has been my solution and the thing that's made me able to function and cope with every aspect of my life, in this first thing in which I want to genuinely be part of the life that everyone else is part of, you know, it's going to stop me from doing that. It's going to hinder me. I can't be like an alcoholic drinking every day and be, you know, a human being capable of being in an emotional relationship with this girl. And it sucked. Like, I started trying to get sober. And I remember I was trying to get sober for all kinds of reasons. I remember my drinking buddy here in Virginia Beach, or in Virginia Beach when I went home for one Thanksgiving break. I go to his place, and I'm expecting like a three-day-long drinking binge. And he shows up at the door, and he's got like this twinkle in his eyes. And I'm like, there is something wrong with my boy John here. And he tells me that he's sober. And this is unfathomable. Like, we would sit there and drink, you know, cases of rum together. And I really didn't think this guy could ever get sober. And so immediately I'm like, well, if he's going to get sober, I should get sober. You know, I want to one-up his soberness, his sobriety. And what actually happened was he invited me over to his place. He'd actually did 12-step work perfectly without even knowing it. Or at least I'm not going to give him credit for knowing it. He invited me over. He invited me over to stay at his place, and I stayed at his place, and I was drinking all night long. And I woke up early in the morning, because I don't really sleep when I drink. I'm just unconscious. And I woke up really early, and I'm looking around the apartment, you know, and I'm thinking about this stuff he had told me yesterday about being sober and going to an AA meeting once a week, and how he was seemingly pretty happy. And I saw this blue book in the corner of the room. And so, like, you know, I do like the tiptoe, not to wake anybody. I go over and I pick up this book and I start reading it. And I got to tell you guys, this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, is a real page turner. Like, it's a real good one. If you haven't checked it out, I highly advocate it. And I started reading this thing. And immediately I realized that, like, whatever this book's about, I'm that thing. And this book seems to be the definitive book on the subject. And I told him I want to get sober, and I went to a meeting for the first time, and I did not stay sober after that. I talked him out of AA 4 days later, and we went on that drinking bender I came for, but I kept trying to get sober. It was a tough road for me. I eventually kept getting arrested at college, and one day I decided that I was done, and I went into this little brick building with a circle and a triangle inscribed in the window, and it was like the first time I really went into AA with the right intent. I was ready to be rid of everything that I was. I wanted to be sober more than anything, and I wanted to not be who I was more than anything. And I went down this crazy journey that's brought me here in a motherfucking cathedral talking about AA. I should not be here, clearly. But that was my first sobriety date in 2014, and I did this program the best I could. Right, and I went through the steps. I got a sponsor. I tried to love you people, and I made this thing my life. I made this thing my life for like a year and a half, but I fundamentally misunderstood a big part of it. You know, I thought that this was a 12-step program of like personal recovery and self-improvement. And once I completed the self-improvement program, like the return on investment became disparagingly low, and I quit working the self-improvement program. And what I failed to understand is that this thing is not a self-improvement program. It's a program about fine-tuning you to be able to go help somebody else. And that is what I neglected more than anything the first time I came in this program. I had no interest in helping any of you. I had a profound spiritual experience. Everything about me changed. I had a psychic change. But I failed to open myself up to caring about other people. And that's immediately what I had to change when I came back in this program last December. I moved back down here to Florida after toying with the idea on and off for about a year. And I jumped into the boat, right? I had been here a while. I had relapsed in St. Petersburg, disappeared from AA a while, showed up at Yana, tried to pick up a white chip, decided that was a mistake, threw it out of the window on the interstate, went home and hated myself. You know, I was sleeping with like my big book and my medallion in a shoebox under my bed, ashamed what people would, like the conversation I would have to have if anybody ever found that. But I picked up another white chip when my math teacher saw me in a meeting one day and saw that I didn't raise my hand for having a year sober. And she came up to me and just showered me with unconditional love that I had not experienced at all when I went back out drinking. And immediately I realized I want this thing. Like the time that I was out there drinking, I really missed this thing. As much as you think you miss drinking, I'll tell you what, you'll miss being here more. You'll miss being here a lot more. And I feel like I want to say something profound because the amount of time I have left is very constrained. But, you know, I was thinking of a lot of profound shit when I was driving from work earlier today, I got to tell you. I was premeditating a lot of stuff to say, and I did want to speak up there like I'm a saint, even though I'm not. And but something I thought of earlier that I want to say, and I was like more passionately charged when I was saying it in the car. It might be weird if I say it here now, but you know, we spend a lot of time looking for God, right? We spend a lot of time praying, trying to talk to this thing, going to churches, going to meetings, trying to find this thing, God, higher power, spirit of the universe, underlying totality of things. Said that one a lot. But the truth is, it's you. Dude, you're God. You're God. Like it's inside of all of us. And the way you're going to experience it is by fearlessly following your heart wherever it takes you. At least that's what I found. Because when I honestly listen to my heart, it's going to take me way out of my comfort zone. It's going to make me stand up for things that I'm afraid of standing up for. It's going to make me face the fears that are deeply rooted inside of me, but also make me who I truly am. And I found that my own consciousness and my heart, when I fearlessly listen to it, has been like the ultimate barometer for what right and wrong is and for how to become a better person in AA. I'm really grateful to be here. Thanks for letting me speak.